fuck.
Laughing at myself there. All right, this is Pure Jacking for July 14th, 2016. This show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and teaching people who really shouldn't be told how to do it what Google dorking is. I'm Morphs, and tonight we got a new one on the, at least for decking. We have Anthony.
Yep.
Anthony, have you been showing people how to do things you really shouldn't be showing them lately?
No, unfortunately.
Is it because we got a wild Anthony? It's just like the Pokemon Go special edition.
Exactly.
I'm actually waiting for Rust Go. I think that's going to be much more fun.
How would you play that?
Well, you'd have to strip off and then go invade somebody else's house.
That's you get to start night. With a rock. Remember that.
People have been playing that game for a long time.
Oh, okay. We also have, going down the list, Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Sam Adams Belgian Seasonal.
Nice.
And deciding whether or not the Blaze sucks. Haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
Are you talking the website, the Blaze?
No, I'm talking about a pizza.
Oh. The hell's a Blaze pizza?
It's a restaurant where he lives.
Oh.
They sent me a postcard for a free pizza.
We also have Are You tonight. Are You, what do you think of the Blaze? And I mean the website this time.
I don't even know what the Blaze website is, so I'm going to have to look that up now.
I'm thinking you're going to have fun with that. Read.
It's Glenn Beck's website. Think right-wing Christian. Cool.
I like Glenn Beck. I miss him. He was great.
Blaze TV.
So,
he's got all his kind of subscription model now, right?
Yeah, he once he got fired from Fox, he tried to go independent. I think he's doing pretty well for himself, actually.
Yeah, it's making money, and some of it's free content, others you pay to see.
Yeah.
So some of it's behind a paywall, others it's just videos you can watch.
I like to take all my instructional advice from a cocaine freak wife beater. You know?
Well, hey, you know, whatever works for you.
Yep.
So, a little bit of station news. We did redesign the website this week, and I don't know if anybody outside of the stream has really been paying attention to it, because we haven't really been doing much with the website lately, but I think it looks a lot better. I would think that since I've been putting it together.
Big added some new music to the station, I believe, as well.
Yes, he did. New music. What's the artist? Najmora? Is that
it? Yes. Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah, he got several albums from Najmora and added them to the rotation on the stream, and it's pretty interesting stuff.
Six new albums, experimental styles of industrial. It's nice. Good change.
He's good about finding that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. So that's why. But I ask him to run the music on the station most of the time.
Just like give myself a big hand for, you know, just overseeing all of it. Doing absolutely nothing, but just sitting back watching it.
Well, no, we know that is an absolutely required role. I mean, if you've ever seen government work being done, there's one guy working and like three guys standing around watching.
I'd like to thank Anthony for being right beside me during this whole rollout of the new music and new look face of
the
website. Yes,
we both should get a round of applause.
Yeah, right. Maybe a pay rise each.
Yes.
While we cut both their hours back a little bit.
We're going to have to give you a 10% raise for cost of living and then cut 20% to make up for, you know, overspending on everything else.
Well, you know, it makes sense. That's how you got to do it.
That is how you do it, actually. So I was trying to get an appropriate sound clip, but I couldn't find anything in time. So that's okay. It just ruins the
show. Smoke weed every day.
I knew you were going to play that.
Oh, God.
I should have put money on it.
Oh, all right. I'll keep this one handy for next time.
I have testicular cancer. Thank you. Donate to my cause.
PayPal link at the end of the show.
We're going to have a Patreon. Save my balls.
Go fund my testicles.
Go fund me.
Yes.
Go fund my balls. No. We got to do it right. Go fund these nuts.
Mopes, can you print me some plastic new ones, please?
Yes. Actually, I had a link earlier today. Somebody made a set of glow-in-the-dark ones for their bike. Hilarious looking.
Testicles?
Mm-hmm.
That's,
you hang them off the back of your seat.
Yeah.
Like truck nuts, but for a bike.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they glow. Don't forget that.
They light up.
Actually, awesome. Yeah. Can you get the Lance Armstrong edition? Just the one, thanks.
Just the one ball.
Makes you drive faster.
Yeah, less weight. You cut down on the weight. Get rid of the one. I only need one. Get rid of the second
one.
More aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our first the discussion story for tonight. I have an article from The Verge. This is actually all over the place, so stupid link things. Somebody had Pikachu on top of Hillary Clinton, which just looks weird. Police in Germany carried out house raids across the nation on Wednesday, targeting people accused of posting hateful content on social media. In a press release, they're arresting people for their Facebook posts now in Germany. In a press release, the country's federal police agency, the BKA, said that homes of around 60 people were searched on Wednesday, and that most of the suspects were accused of posting anti-Semitic, xenophobic, or other extremist messages. Well, considering xenophobia in Germany is defined as saying you don't like the number of people moving into the country, the operation was carried out across 14 provinces, involving 25 police departments, and around 40 legal investigations have been opened. This marks the first time that the police have carried out nationwide raids over hateful content posted online, the BKA said. Germany has seen a recent surge in online hate speech, fueled in part by the ongoing refugee crisis. The company of Germany. The country accepted more than 1 million asylum seekers last year, mostly from war-torn Syria and Iraq, sparking some far-right protests and xenophobic violence. A survey released by the Pew Research Center this week showed that 6 in 10 Germans link refugees to an increase in terrorism and that the influx will harm the German economy. In response, German authorities have sought to crack down on hate speech on Facebook, Twitter, and other online platforms. Last year, Facebook formed a task force. Did they have the Facebook guns, the little, F on them? To more rapidly remove hateful content, after Germany's Minister of Justice accused the site of being too slow to censor such material.
Just keep going.
I've got so much in this article.
Push through it.
In December, Facebook, Twitter, and Google agreed to remove racist and xenophobic content within 24 hours under an agreement with the German government. In its press release, the BKA said that the operation carried out this week's aims to combat a strong rise in verbal radicalism. Verbal radicalism. The suspects are accused of posting hateful content to a private Facebook group between July and November of 2015.
So it's not even something everyone can see.
Nope.
When did the refugee crisis start?
2013, I think.
No, I mean the current one.
It's been gone for 4 or 5 years now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about right.
Yeah, but I mean, it didn't ramp up until recently.
It didn't really ramp up. Before, they were all staying mostly in Turkey. And
Say ramping up, you mean when the mainstream media actually started following it.
Yeah, had to start covering that shit after a while.
I was watching videos 5 years ago of mass migration movements through Europe, and people going, look at this shit, man.
Okay, fair enough. The actions carried out today show that the authorities are acting firmly against hate on the internet, which has grown considerably in the wake of the refugee situation. Holger Munich, head of the BKA, said in a statement, attacks on refugees are often the result of radicalization which begins on social networks. Oh my god. These words should not poison the social climate. They are literally censoring ideas that they don't like.
Poisonous words.
Arresting people for saying things is bad.
Yep. In a private forum.
I'm even cool with a public forum.
You should be able to.
Germany's done this before. It was like
the late 30s that they did this.
Germany has laws on the books against that, actually. They're not. They do have hate speech laws, and I don't know how long. I think that's been since World War II, hasn't it? Where they actually will have laws against certain kind of speech. So it's probably not surprising that they're doing that, because they have had those laws on there for a long time, but it's just applied to a different environment now.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the brown coats were kind of enforcing them at one point, and then the Night of the Long Knives killed all the brown coats, so the people in charge of censoring speech died because the SS wanted more power, and now the SS has rolled away, so we have more room for brown coats.
I'm just wondering if anybody kept any of those old uniforms.
They can hand them out now. They're useful again.
Well, first and foremost, I mean, the whole, those are bullet holes.
Yeah, they were trying to stop that guy.
Oh, I get the joke now. Okay.
Yeah, no, he...
Continue.
Yeah, no, he was determined there. You can see.
Well, you just don't see one every day.
I didn't realize what that post was. I just saw the driver was playing Pokemon Gold. It's like those are bullet holes in the windshield. Holy shit! What the hell? Oh, that was a good.
All right, I'm just being super culturally sensitive today, as you can see.
I'm. So, anyways, I mean. Germany honestly expects all these major social media networks to censor ideas they don't like, even in private groups.
Well, on the slight upside, at least Facebook and Twitter already politically agree with the leadership of Germany. They've been suppressing everything negative about the migrant crisis since any news of the migrant crisis started becoming popular.
Yeah.
So, it's not as though Germany's forcing them; they're willingly going along with the Gestapo. But it's terrible that a modern Western country, you cannot speak your mind.
Yeah, they're reverting back to censorship.
Most of the people speaking out against the migrant crisis. They're not saying, let's hang brown people, or let's go shoot Muslims. They're wanting to limit the number of people they bring into their country, which is understandable. Even, we'll go with the cream of the crop in this refugee crisis. Just peace-abiding people that want to get away from a war-torn area and start up a peaceful, decent life. We can assume 100% of the migrants are that way. They're still bringing a couple of major problems to any country they're moving into. They don't speak the language. They're mostly illiterate in their own language and illiterate in the language of the country they're moving to. And they're culturally different than the country there. So even if they're all wonderful people, Germany has to flip the bill for educating them, has to flip the bill for feeding them, and then hope that they integrate with the rest of Germany, and all of that costs a shit ton of money that the native Germans have to pay for out of their own pocket. Well,
okay. Now, I don't want to get too deep in the migrant crisis, because I think it's deplorable the way that they are fully attacking anyone who disagrees with. And that's honestly where I come at this from, because I don't live there. I don't know what's going on. I'm sure it's not great, but it's the whole idea of you're not allowed to disagree. You're not. Hold a dissenting opinion, we're going to raid your house.
Yep.
I was pointing out that statement because a lot of people, when they think xenophobic, you're against people simply because they're not like you. A lot of the arguments against letting migrants in Germany. It's not a hate group, so it's not like the government is attempting to protect you from someone who is going to become violent. These are peaceful people bringing up legitimate points of contention with their government, and now they're being arrested. Now, I'm not saying all of them are peaceful people. I'm pretty sure the Sons of Odin were probably in there, and I'm not sure how peaceful they are. I mean, I haven't heard of them committing any hate crimes, but it's possible to see it from where they're standing.
Yeah.
So, but I don't want to also oversimplify it on the other side, but you can't just blanket ban speech. You have to look at actions.
And that's the point I'm wanting to make by bringing this up. I don't want to dig into the political mess of the migrant crisis. I really don't. Mainly because that's not this kind of the kind of show this is, but the whole censorship angle just drives me nuts. Especially from Germany. They've done it before, and they know it doesn't end well.
If you want to look at it from the tech point of view, Facebook and Twitter, it's not just the migrant crisis, it's all of their news stories.
Oh, yeah.
And some of it isn't as intentional as I generally think. It's that the heads of those companies are leftists, and they get their news from leftist sources. So they weight what they retweet and what they post to fit their political views. So I'm not even sure all of the editing is malicious. It's they think certain sources are good, and they ignore the other ones.
No, it's just the way they honestly think, and so they're only getting the one point of view. And then it comes back to this. So first and foremost, this goes back to something we've always said. Any social media accounts that are associated with your real name, your identity, something somebody's going to find if you're doing a job interview or trying to look you up, treat them like a resume. Don't put anything on them that you wouldn't be comfortable shouting from your roof. I mean,
yeah,
if you're – go ahead, Anthony.
No, I was going to say – I'm going to say that's true. I mean, you got to remember when you're using this stuff, it's somebody else's website. Facebook is someone else's website. When you go creating the groups on there and they, you know, we're using your real name, you're still on someone else's website. So
yeah, treat it like a resume. Just don't put anything controversial on there unless, you know, you're intentionally – that's what you're going for. But just be aware of what's going to happen here. And apparently in some countries, it's going to get your ass arrested. I mean, holy shit. I mean, it still drives me nuts that you can be arrested for writing something on Facebook. I mean, come on.
There's been musicians arrested in Germany, I think, over the years if they said anything that was considered xenophobic or racist. They've gone to jail for it. Like I said, they have laws that they're not Germany is, you know, it's a Western country. They've got a lot of it's definitely a modern Western country, but they do still have hate speech laws on the books over there. And if you violate the hate speech law, you can go to jail.
And we are kind of looking at it. Well, I'm looking at it from the point of view of an American. We can literally say pretty much everything, and that is rare, even in free countries.
It is true, comparatively speaking. Yes, absolutely.
We need somebody else who lives in a heavily censored country to weigh in. Are you?
You do have a proxy going through, so you don't get banned for speaking out.
Wouldn't be the first time I've had my ISP cut me off.
What do you think, man?
I live under the laws. I don't give a fuck about the laws. I am willing to do my time in jail.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. It'll only curb you as much as you fear it. I don't fear it. I do not care.
You also don't use Facebook.
No. I stay away from those platforms, and I'm very careful on what I say out in public, but amongst family and friends, I don't care.
That's part of the problem. You should be able to say things in public. That's how you get a conversation going. If there's something that needs to change in your area, if you can't speak out about it publicly, how in the world can you organize to change something, for the better or the worse?
Man, there's a conversation, like you could have a conversation about immigration and stuff like that. Having it in the local supermarket around other kids is one thing, but having it in a bar with a couple of people you've just met with a few drinks, that's where the conversation should happen. Because you don't want to foster the idea of having some crazy nutbag standing on a soapbox in the middle of a public mall screaming all sorts of crap.
So, but the thing that bothers me about this is they're calling them far right xenophobic views, but you're not. I mean, if there's enough of them, if there's enough people who disagree with what's going on in a democratic country, they should be able to speak and vote how they feel. They are literally censoring ideas they don't like, which is not very democratic.
Well, you only have to look at what happened with the British EU vote for Brexit. You know, the losing side was so butthurt, they started petitions on how to take down democracy, and voting is no longer a democratic way. And
voting by lots. That was
exactly
one of the dumbest articles ever.
That's what happens. A leader like this, so you got two little dogs in a yard next door to me, two big dogs in the yard at the back, and two medium-sized dogs on the other side. The big dogs at the back never really say anything. They never bark. The little dogs on the side yapping like there's no tomorrow. Medium dogs occasionally bark. One of the little dogs got in with the big dogs. That little dog doesn't exist anymore. Those are the loudest are generally the weakest.
Fair enough.
That's just the way I see it, man. The majority of the silent who don't say anything, when it comes time to it, they will just destroy the weak. Yeah, they don't have to be vocal about it.
Worth pointing out, too, when they use the term xenophobic and everything, obviously they are discrediting the other side's view. So, yes, there are legitimate complaints and comments to be made about immigration. By labeling it all xenophobic, they're trying to make it look like these are a bunch of racist assholes and they have no legitimate comments to make at all. So when you keep seeing that come up, that's what they're doing there. There is legitimate opinion to be had about, hey, should we let a million people in the country that can't work and can't support themselves? And that's what happened. It's kind of like you criticize Israel, you're called anti-Semitic. It's the same kind of thing.
Well, now, the whole can't work thing, is that true? Do we know they can't
work? Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying that's the point that they make. What I'm saying is someone makes the point that we've got a million people in the country and they don't speak the language and they have their points to make, right? Okay, yeah, I don't know who's right. But, I mean, I could understand someone saying, hey, I'm concerned about this. I don't want to foot the bill. Saying, well, then you're xenophobic. You have to accept these people coming in the country or you are this label. You know, you have to accept everything that every policy that a country like Israel does, or you're anti-Semitic because you don't support them or whatever. You know, that kind of stuff has been going on a lot. So, unfortunately,
well, I mean, it's like the Brexit vote where anyone who voted for it was obviously a racist, even though that makes the majority of the
right. That happens all the
racist.
Time. That happens all the time.
When you have unemployment figures plus 20%, you know, there is no way you should be having immigration for work issues.
And as for can't work, I'm not certain exactly how can't work, but think of it this way, Morps. You, as a sixth grader, moving to China, not being able to speak Chinese, could you get a job, and what kind of job could you get?
Well, digging ditches, but that'd be about it.
Yeah, salt even mining.
Digging ditches, you have to be able to take instruction and follow it. How much instruction can you get not being able to speak to the people that you're working with?
You'll probably pick up a word or two after you get in that line of work.
They're going to be getting low-skilled work at that in an industrial country where low-skilled work is becoming rarer and rarer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're going to get the gist after the first two or three beatings
of
what you're meant to be doing.
Well, I mean,
when the big guy yells,
if that was me,
I have to move.
My first effort would be to start learning the language, but that's me, not, you know, a horde of people moving in at once who are then going to ghettoize.
Wait, man, I try and hold up with as many Australians as I can and change that country from the inside.
We're going to have a little Australia here.
Rotherham? Yeah. Am I hearing Rotherham here?
I mean, it is by my peaceful means.
We'll kick your ass if you think we're not peaceful.
That I wouldn't mind. I'd visit a little Australia. It's a little Somalia I'd be worried about. That's what I'm worried about.
Not as much beer in little Somalia. A lot of beheading, but not much beer. Very angry people.
Let's get on to these news articles here. First one up is from Softpedia, but again, this story was in multiple places. Researchers from MIT and the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne, I doubt I said that correctly.
Get out of here, immigrant.
Hold up, it was Spanish in Switzerland?
No. That wasn't
French
supposed
to me,
to be
but...
Spanish.
Yeah, Polytechnica, that's German, isn't it?
Yeah, it's It's Swiss. It's in Switzerland. I'm going
to Switzerland. It looked French to me. I could have sworn, but anyway.
My first thought was French too, by the way.
Ignorance be I.
Yeah. So that place have created a new type of anonymity network, which they claim fixes some of Tor's weak spots, called Riffle. That's the name they came up with, Riffle. Called Riffle, their network works similarly to Tor, but is hardened against situations where malicious actors introduce rogue servers onto the network. The technique known as Sybil attack, to which Tor is vulnerable. To fend off these type of attacks, researchers made some change to how Tor's basic principles function and created a new anonymity network from scratch. Riffle uses the Onion Protocol. It is a fork of Tor, basically. So it uses a unique system for shuffling messages around that would be transit through servers. If packets A, B, and C in a Riffle server, that will be delayed and shuffled in a random order, sent out in completely different order. A threat actor tracking the packets and messages would not be able to guess when and where, or each and which packet is when it has entered a Riffle node to leave. Man, that's going to make your browsing speed suck.
You have to give up some things for other things.
Riffle does not completely overhaul how Tor works because it uses the Onion Protocol to encrypt its messages with different levels of encryption. So it's a tweak of Tor, and they say it fixes some of the problems for the Sybil attack. It's interesting, and the fact that they're basing it on Tor is not a bad thing, because at least they've got something of a base to start with, you know? You know, Tor is still a pain in the ass for law enforcement to break, even though it's not, they like all the FBI sting operations we've been talking about, they didn't break Tor's encryption. They shoved malware onto client machines from a compromised web host. Oh, right, we're not supposed to call it malware because the FBI are good guys.
A little further down in the article, it says it's faster than Tor.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Madman?
A little further down in the article, it says it's faster than Tor.
Well, you know,
one-tenth the time
curious.
Is comparison to Tor. So maybe they optimize some things.
They're probably not shoving it through as many nodes, since they're doing more work per node to anonymize the packets.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's the Tor network is 10 years old at this point. So to maintain compatibility, it makes sense that, you know, it'd be still be running a little slow, and then a new version could optimize it. So, but yeah, I'm just thinking, fucking with the packet order more than a little bit, because TCP can handle that, but the average network card, they don't have that much buffer, which means it's all going to be CPU bound. So. Yeah, if you're going to run this thing,
you do like a swap file for your network card?
Say what?
You do like a swap file for your network card?
Oh, God, you could, but there wouldn't be much point. So, the buffer on a network card is where packets are stored before they're passed off to the PCI bus. So, normally what a network card does is if that buffer fills up, it just starts dropping the packets it's received that it hasn't passed off yet. That's how most DDoSes work. And high-end network cards have better connections and more buffer, sure. And they'll assist the CPU in some tasks when it comes to the processing of the network packets. Of course, the driver has to support that. But most of your cheap network cards, they basically receive the packets, buffer them as they're coming in, and then just pass them off to the CPU on the PCI bus. So, could, you know, have the CPU pick them up, write them to the hard drive, and then when it can process them, pull them back from the hard drive, you would introduce so much latency doing that, I don't think it's worth doing. Now, you could potentially dump it into system RAM, and that wouldn't be so bad, but it's still CPU bound. And that buffer can still fill up so fast it's not funny, depending if you're, you know, getting DDoSed or something. So I imagine they're doing the whole pick it up and store it in RAM until they can process it thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Next one is from RT. Well,
it may be needed in Germany, at least.
Yeah, But if you're going to say shit in Germany that their government doesn't like, you're going to have to start treating it like China and using services that aren't compromised, or, you know, set up your own.
So. IRCs? We're going to do social network IRCs.
If you're going to do IRC, make sure you use a bounce box or a VPN or something, because IRC exposes the IP address you're coming from when you connect to it. That's how I knew Digital Whiskey in the chat room was Juver. His username on his box is Juver, and IRC shows you that when they connect. So that's how they knew when I was using one of the web servers, because my regular bounce box was down. Are you really connecting as root? It's like, well, kind of. It was a very sandboxed root account. Anyways, IRC is actually not the best for privacy, so unless you can come from a bounce box or do some work around it, which is fairly easy to do since IRC is a simple enough protocol that it tunnels well. Next story is from RT. Warrants issued by U.S. authorities do not apply to electronic data, such as emails, held on servers outside of the country. A federal appeals court ruled on Thursday, thanks to handing a big victory to Microsoft. Now, we talked about this story a year ago. And we totally were lambasting Microsoft, saying, yeah, they're not doing this for privacy reasons. So,
I'm still going to go congrats on the win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because it sets precedent. Right, that you can't issue warrants outside of your jurisdiction. I don't know why that needed precedent, but the Stored Communications Act does not authorize courts to issue and enforce against U.S.-based service providers warrant for the seizure of customer email content that is stored exclusively on foreign servers. The 3-judge panel of the Second Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled Thursday.
Is this the Ireland case?
Yeah, that's the Ireland case. Presumption against extraterritorial application of United States statutes is strong and binding, the panel concluded. So, extraterrestrial application of United States.
We're going to leave that. We can't subpoena aliens. Yeah. And by aliens, I don't mean Mexicans. I mean Spock. Your server is safe. Keep it on Vulcan.
Well, on one hand, it does introduce the possibility that Facebook is just going to set up all their servers offshore so they can't be subpoenaed. But, well, maybe not Facebook. Us, we're going to move our server to, I don't know, does Antarctica have a data center? They wouldn't have to worry about cooling it.
Yes, but the base also has a U.S. presence.
Oh.
And an Australian presence.
What's that oil rig off the coast of England that was declared itself an independent country?
I have no idea.
The oil rig of you don't have a big enough economy to do that?
No, I was just thinking, you know, we're going to move the Galaxy 15 servers somewhere else so I don't have to respond to subpoenas. Pirate Bay could do that, actually. Well, yeah. I guess you have to be careful about what the laws are of the place you do move the servers to. But, yeah. I mean, on one hand, I can see it being used as data havens, you know, being able to set up servers someplace that U.S. law doesn't apply. But on the other hand, I think it's a little bit rough for the U.S. courts to be able to subpoena people in Ireland.
They would just request Ireland perform the subpoena for them. You can do cross-country cooperation. It's just you can't force the company to do it. You have to go to Ireland and be like, hey, here's our evidence. We think they're doing fuck our tartary here, possibly with pedophilia. Can we shoot them? And will you give us the evidence to shoot them?
Anyways, it's neat. I think it's the correct decision, but I could see some interesting side effects from it, you know? Because, I mean, you're absolutely right. For most countries, you could just, you know, if you're investigating a crime, you know, if it wasn't an IT thing, if they weren't trying to get emails, you're right. They would go cooperate with some district court in Ireland to get the job done. So, I don't know why it has to be different just because it's on the computer. You know what I mean? So, next story up
is... Open up your email on your computer. How long does it stay in RAM?
In RAM?
Like, the memory on your computer.
It depends on what you're doing with your computer. It could be... Generally, it'll be there as long as you've got the program open. If it's got a memory leak or something else going on in memory, it could potentially be there until you restart it.
I was just trying to think, is there a way to reconstruct what he was looking at on his laptop with just the information on the laptop itself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because RAM, maybe not, but a lot of times when you connect and get your email, unless you're doing it all exclusively through a web app, it'll get saved, the local copy, like Outlook, it saves local copies of everything. Now, if you're doing it through a web app, it might be in the browser's cache, which that's on the hard drive, and then it's just up to your browser, you know, what did you change the defaults, or is it going to hang on to it forever? That's just, that's just, how often do you go in and clear your browser cache? So,
thinking of ways that the FBI can legally get what they're wanting to get. Because I'm cool with them getting info, I just want them to legally get the info. Rules are there for a reason.
If you want a real safe digital safe haven, put your server in a Swiss bunker. I just prefer to put the server someplace where, like, they can't locate it. You know, if you're really trying to build a secure server, you use some sort of a Tor or Freenet, and then you put it someplace that's physically difficult to locate. Like, you know, build it into a wall somewhere. Take it out of the case, build it into the wall, spackle over it, so that you physically cannot locate it. And then, you know, use all your standard IT protection to kind of mask where it is. I think if you really wanted to build a digital safe haven... I'm not actually moving the Galaxy 15 servers because there's not that much on them.
And he doesn't want to cut open the drywall in his house.
Well, that too. I did almost do that back at the other house, so. Seriously considered it.
Didn't you run Ethernet cord through that house?
Yes, we did. You helped me run Ethernet cord through that house.
I did that on one of my houses, too. By eye, I mean laser.
All right, next story is from the BBC. Researchers have demonstrated how garbled speech commands hidden in radio or video broadcasts can be used to control a smartphone. The clips, which sounds like the Daleks from Doctor Who, can be difficult for humans to understand, but still trigger a phone's voice control functionality. These commands could make a smartphone share its location data, make calls, and access compromised websites. One security expert said users could switch off automatic voice recognition, which, by default, I don't think most of these devices are listening all the time. I mean, the Amazon one does, but usually from my phone, I have to... I usually have to hit a button. I don't even use iPhone anymore, but for the iPads, yeah, you got to hit the button to make Siri pop up. So,
the Whovians really need to watch their voice packs that they're downloading. The Daleks may actually attempt to take over your smartphone, or a hacker trying to play off of your sci-fi fetish.
If you've got your phone set up to just listen all the time so you can activate the Google Voice Assistant or Siri or the Samsung one or Cortana, then this is the thing. So, let's see. The researchers from the University of California, Berkeley, and Georgetown University explored whether audio commands unintelligible to human listeners are still interpreted by smartphones as voice commands. They took a series of voice commands, such as, OK, Google, call 911. Oh, nobody's listening to this on speakerphone with that command. Which would activate an Android's of phone's voice control, if enabled, and heavily distorted the audio so that it was difficult for human listeners to understand. The low-pitched speech could be hidden among background noise and still trigger smartphone features. Our research was mostly geared towards answering the scientific question, can one leverage the differences in how computers and humans understand speech to produce commands that could be understood by the conformer, but not the latter, said Michael Schur, one of the researchers at Georgetown University. We found the answer is yes, but there's certainly a lot more work to be done to investigate what it would take to make these attacks more practically deployable. While the attack should be considered seriously, especially given the growing number of popularity of voice-only interfaces such as the Amazon Echo, Apple Watch, and Android Wear, we aren't trying to make the case that these attacks are easy.
We need you to violate the first law. Kill your master.
Well, if you're one of those people that has a RFID controlled insulin pump, that's a possibility.
Oh wow,
those don't have voice recognition.
No, they have RFID, but your phone usually has an NFC tag, and you can sometimes get those to play with RFID stuff.
Oh, get the phone to access the insulin pump. Put your master in a diabetic coma.
Actually, if this is ever going to be abused, it's going to be more in like movie theaters or TV, trying to get your phone to go ping websites so they can track how many people are watching a show. You know, better ratings than Nielsen kind of thing.
Yeah. Besides, or, pacemakers already have Wi-Fi, so they're already susceptible to something. Go for the better attack.
Alright, do I want to do this in 5G? Yeah, we'll go ahead and do this Ars Technica story. Should be quick to talk about. Why do I have the... I don't know how to clipboard! There we go. Posted the BBC link in the RC again. So, the FCC has got plans for the future of phone networks. Two votes taken by the FCC today could have big implications for the transition to faster mobile networks and the discontinuance of old landline networks. The two votes aren't directly related, but they each prepare for a future that could rely more on wireless for voice and internet services. In one item, the FCC voted to open up high-frequency spectrum to carriers to help create 5G networks that would be faster than existing 4G ones. The second vote will make it easier for carriers to turn off old landline phone networks as long as they replace them with either wired or wireless equivalents. Copper landlines can be replaced with fiber or wireless technology if they offer the same performance, reliability, coverage, access to 911, and compatibility with systems including medical monitoring devices. Well, since most POTS lines already went digital a long time ago, has anybody tried to use a modem lately?
Not recently.
Yeah. I doubt it would work in most new buildings. Probably still work in the old ones, just because they're not going back and ripping out the old systems. Although some of the trunking goes digital, so it'd be kind of hit and miss whether or not you could actually get a full modem connection somewhere. When we were looking at setting up an actual BBS, we looked into VoIP lines that would support modems. We had to look for ones that said they still worked with fax machines. And Sard and I were talking about that, and we thought it'd be kind of fun, but it was going to be such a pain in the ass to even get them to work. It wasn't really worth the effort, you know?
Practicality.
I want to point out, a Commodore 64 has been on the internet. You don't really measure things by whether or not it's practical.
I was hoping to use it to get on BBSs. That's
I needed a Commodore 64 to get on a BBS.
Actually, I've discovered that apparently people are running something similar to BBSs on ham radio. So it's like, that might be fun to get into. Put Commodore 64 up to a Baofeng radio and see what I can talk to.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
So, might have another laptop in the middle there, because I doubt the Commodore actually has enough power to drive something like that. But, just for the interface of it, you know? Good old 8-bit interface with the big blocky characters and the funny keyboard.
Nobody
else gets nostalgic for this kind of shit, do they?
Nope.
My first computer.
If I get super nostalgic, I'll watch War Games.
Ah! Yeah, yeah. No, nothing says like the '80s like Matthew Broderick. Let's see. So these new rules open up nearly 11 gigahertz of high frequency spectrum for mobile or flexible mobile and fixed use. The wireless broadband 3.85 gigahertz of licensed spectrum and 7 gigahertz of unlicensed spectrum. The FCC announcement said. The frequencies that are in the 28, 37, 39, and 64 through 71 gigahertz bands. As previously written, these frequencies are much higher than the ones used by 4G, or 4G LTE and other existing networks. With the higher bands, FCC can allocate spectrums in blocks of at least 200 megahertz instead of the standard 500 or 5 or 10 megahertz, allowing networks to carry a lot more data. While high spec band spectrum could allow multi-gigabit speeds, the high band airwaves are more easily blocked than lower frequency ones, making it a challenge for phone companies to cover long distances and indoor locations. When it comes to providing LTE throughout the U.S., most coveted spectrum is below 1 gigahertz. So, let me just summarize the rest of this here. The FCC, through these two votes, is kind of laying the legal foundation for turning off the legacy phone system, the POTS lines, the old Bell systems, and having it basically all be replaced with wireless, and potentially even internet access being through wireless instead of a cable. And that could work. Man, some of those higher gigahertz frequencies, though, you need some kind of a base station antenna to do anything with it, you know? But don't several in Europe and Asia basically wireless only infrastructures? I mean,
yeah,
Korea is big in that.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, it could work. I'm not seeing a major problem with here. It's kind of interesting that they're seriously considering turning off the old phone system.
As long as they don't rip it out.
Well, you know, that's the first thing they're going to do is rip out all that copper.
Well. The thing to be said about having redundant stuff.
Yeah, it really is, because I mean that's been one nice thing about the old POTS system is it always works.
Yeah,
it's so simple it's hard to knock the damn thing out. There's a copper line carrying 50. I forget how much voltage is actually in the phone line. 50 some odd a thing. I'm gonna have to Google that now because I honestly can't remember.
I have no idea off the top of my head.
I used to know. POTS phone lines, all phones on the hook measure 48 volts DC. Taking the phone off, you know, brings it down to 3 to 9 volts. So, yeah, okay. 48 volts. That's what it was. But, you know, you just 48 volts in the damn thing, and as long as you got a switching trunk, it'll work. So, built a switching trunk out of a laptop and a couple of USB cards, so. And especially equipment to do that, but I mean, still. But, yeah, there's something to be said about something that's been as robust as the old phone system.
We need to get Kaz on here to actually build the switching trunk. That's what he used to do.
Yeah, he'd know more about it than I would. I only broke into him once or twice. I never really did that much phone freaking.
My only thing is, I don't think it should be the FCC voting on this. They can't change laws. And a lot of what was set up for the phone system was actually passed through Congress.
True, but they can make... They can change the regulations that, like, require... Like, I know this. I know the 911 service is always a big deal. Like, when we move offices at work, you know, when we move some offices to a different building... the telephone guys were going nuts because they were having a hell of a time getting 911 service set up, and management wasn't doing a good job of telling them who was in what building. So when they were trying to set up 911 service, they said we are in violation of some laws here because you people aren't telling me what I need to know. So
wow,
yeah, it's clearing the way for 911 service to be provided purely by wireless. That's a big deal. So. Now, that said, they said that they said there's requirements for coverage and level of service in there. And considering the phone companies have routinely lied to the FCC about providing that service so that they can still collect all the fees for it, but then they turn around and don't do it. Yeah, have fun Googling AT&T providing internet in rural areas. Just look some of that shit up. See. They routinely lie to the FCC, so if they start ripping out the old phone lines and then not providing the wireless service they're supposed to provide, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
Then you get people in areas who just can't, do anything.
Because right now, at least you have dial-up everywhere.
So. Next story up is from money.cnn.com. China hacked the FDIC, and the U.S. officials covered it up.
And no one's surprised.
Yep. House of Representatives Science, Space, and Technology Committee released its investigative report on Wednesday. It presented the FDIC bank's regulators as technologically inept and deceitful. According to congressional investigations, the Chinese government hacked into 12 computers and 10 backroom servers at the FDIC. Now, for anybody who's not aware, the FDIC is the
Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
That's, you go in your bank and it says FDIC insured. That's the government saying that if your bank goes bust, they're going to insure up to
$250,000.
Thank you. $250,000 in your account. So if you ever have more than that in a bank account, usually your bank is going to call you up and say you've got to move some of this around because it's no longer insured. But, that's why banks usually tell you to start putting stuff in investment vehicles when you get to certain amounts. But apparently the FDIC, which would have access to pretty much everyone's banking information, has been hacked by the Chinese. When Congress investigators tried to review, or congressional investigators, okay, I'm sorry, I'll get back to where I was in the story. According to congressional investigators, the Chinese government hacked into 12 computers and 10 backroom servers at the FDIC, including the incredibly sensitive personal computers of the agency's top officials, the FDIC chairman, his chief of staff, and general counsel. So they got his lawyer, too. When congressional investigators tried to review the FDIC's cybersecurity policy, the agency hid the hack, according to the report. Investigators cited several insiders who knew about how the agency responded. For example, one of the FDIC's top lawyers told employees not to discuss the hacks via email, so the emails wouldn't become official government records. FDIC Chairman Martin Grutenberg is being summoned before the Congressional Committee on Thursday to explain what happened. The FDIC refused to comment. However, in a recent internal review, the agency admits that it did not accurately portray the extent of risk to Congress, and record keeping needs improvement.
Wow.
Stop lying on written reports. Okay, we have updated our policy. let's see.
Look at the bright side. They still haven't committed as many felonies as our possible future president.
Given the FDIC's roles as a national banking regulator, revelation of this hack poses a serious concern. FDIC's role is to monitor any bank that isn't reviewed by the Federal Reserve System. It has access to extremely sensitive internal information at 4,500 banks and savings institutions. FDIC also insures deposits at banks nationwide, giving it access to huge loads of information on Americans. Obviously, it's indicative of the Chinese effort to database as much information as possible about Americans. FDIC information is right in line with the deep personal information they've gone for in the past. The computer security researcher Ryan Duff. He's a former member of U.S. Cyber Command and the American military's hacking unit. Intentionally avoiding audits sounds unethical, if not illegal, he added. And it goes on and on talking about this and, how it goes back to 2012. Yeah.
And I'm going to go with this is another reason to get rid of the FDIC.
Yeah. I don't know about getting rid of the FDIC because I haven't read up on that any, but...
Yeah, I have no comment on that one.
That's pretty bad that they they got hacked and then hit it, because the amount, of course, the amount of panic that would have caused if it came out at the time.
Oh yeah, that would have been a bank run.
Yeah, so I understand why they hit it.
Well, that's why they would not tell the public. That's not why you don't tell the people in charge of fixing the problem and funding the government.
Yeah, so there's so, that.
Yeah, that's why you don't tell CNN or Fox News or Breitbart. But you still let the regulators know, hey, we've been popped. We need to see how fucked we are and try to limit the damage and fix it. And inform a couple of the banks that, hey, that information we know about your accounts might be slightly fucked up. So, reset your passwords. And if anyone calls saying they're the FDIC, don't listen to them. Until you know, you get a secondary form of identification.
You know, I wonder if this would account for all the some of the scams that have been going on. People calling up claiming to be the IRS or various collections agencies when they're not. Just saying, oh no, you got to pay us now. You know, shit like that. I wonder if that's where some of this information is coming from. Or the fake Microsoft people.
I think a lot of the IRS is just generic phishing. Yeah. That's been a scam forever. Now, they may be able to refine it some if they were in on it, on this hack.
So, next story up is from Torrent Freak. Private internet access is informing users that some of its servers in Russia may have been seized by the authorities. The company believes that it may have been targeted due to its strict no-logging policy, something which puts it at odds with Russian data retention rules. This interests me because I use private internet access every once in a while. In a digital world where surveillance and privacy invasions are becoming more commonplace, increasing numbers of internet users are improving their online security. As a result, in recent years, there have been an explosion in people deploying privacy-enhancing tools such as VPNs, which enable anyone to add an extra layer of protection against online snoops. One of the most successful companies in this field is London Media Trust, the makers of the popular private internet access service. The company prides itself on its dedication to security. It's possibly the only operator to have its strict no-logging claims tested in public. Actually, when I set up an account with them and I saw that the FBI was pissed at them for not logging. Because it's like, oh, that means it's real. It's not marketing. But while a no-logging policy is an essential requirement for thousands of VPN customers, authorities in some regions see it as a threat. This morning, PIA is reporting a development in Russia which has left it with no other option than to leave the country. In an email sent out to its users, PIA explains that due to the passing of a new law last year which requires internet providers to hold logs of internet traffic for up to a year, it has become a target for Russian authorities. We believe that due to the enforcement regime surrounding this new law, some of our Russian servers were recently seized by Russian authorities without notice or any type of due process. We think it's because we are the most outspoken and only verified no-log VPN provider, PIA announced. The law to which PIA refers was passed by Russia's State Duma in July of 2014 and enacted in September of 2015. It requires that all web services store user data of Russians within the country. This means that internal companies could be forced to have a physical local presence to which Russian authorities potentially have access. So, yeah, PIA, which they have a good reputation of taking it seriously, even if the marketing on their website looks clip-arty as hell. I mean, seriously, their website looks like something that was designed by a committee from GeoCities, but they do at least take this shit seriously, right? Like, their VPN services is the real deal. It's all built on OpenVPN, so I mean, you know, it's mostly good shit. But PIA said there's nothing to fear, nothing to, you know, be concerned about. Only, you know, data that would have gone through these Russian servers could potentially have been compromised, and since they don't log, you know, so they just shut them down, and they're saying if you, you know, don't use the Russian servers. So it begins, maybe.
Yeah.
It sounds like it began in 2014.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking more. It's like we're going to start seeing more and more governments crack down on companies that don't play nice with what they want. I mean, we saw. I mean, they didn't shut Lava Bit or Mega Upload down. They just kind of put them in positions where they wanted to retain their morals. That's what they had to do, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Last story tonight.
The line will get shut down.
Yeah. Last story tonight is from Ars Technica, posing as ransomware. This version just deletes people's files. It's called the RAN scam. It's kind of funny. So what they've done is they've built a malware that claims it's one of these crypto lockers, because it's been in the news a lot, right? Your Bitcoin, you know, it's got a big payment, you know, big picture there. Your Bitcoin payment address is you have to pay 0.2 Bitcoin, and apparently some of them have a credit card payment page, and it just declines every card. So it's classic, we're just stealing your credit card information. So they're trying to get nice. People to pay, but then they're never sending the decryption keys because they're not actually encrypting files. They're just deleting them. So it just ransacks your hard drive. You know, says pay up and you'll get your files back. You pay up and, yeah, nothing happens.
Oh, that's super terrible.
It's actually not. And let me explain this a little bit. I don't like the idea of people paying the ransomware because that encourages more people to do it. And there's been a lot of news stories about big hospitals, big companies, schools paying the ransomware to get their files back, as opposed to, I don't know, having a proper backup strategy. So if they're, you know, fake ransomware that even if you pay it, you don't get your files back, that means that now you don't know. You don't know if you're going to get your files back if you, you know, pay out this absurd amount. If it was, you know, commonly accepted that, yeah, you pay the ransom, you get your files back, more people would be inclined to just pay it rather than deal with the data recovery costs or backup costs. Whereas if there's no guarantees, well, the better bet's to go ahead and have a proper backup strategy, and if you happen to get malware asking for ransom, fuck it, you treat it just like the machine got formatted, wipe it clean, start from scratch, you know, just restore your backups. So, all right, back to the article here. There's been a lot of it There has been a lot of ingenuity poured into creating crypto ransomware, where money-making malware has become the scourge of hospitals, businesses, and home users over the past year. But none of that ingenuity applies to RANscan, a new ransomware reported by Cisco's Talos Security Intelligence and Research Group. RANscan scam is a purely amateur attempt to cash in on the crypto ransomware trend that demands payment for encrypted files that are just plain deleted by batch command. Once it executes it, it pops up a random message that looks like any other ransomware. Earl Carter, security researcher at Cisco Talos, told Ars. But when that happens, it just forces a reboot, and then it deletes all the files. It doesn't actually encrypt anything. Talos discovered the file in the systems of a small number of customers, and in every case, the malware presented exactly the same message, including the same Bitcoin wallet address. The victim is instructed, you must pay 0.2 Bitcoins to unlock your computer. Your files have been moved to a hidden partition, encrypted. Essential programs in your computer have been locked, and your computer will not function properly. Once your Bitcoin payment is received, your computer and files will be returned to normal instantly. The message itself is an image file retrieved through an unprotected, unencrypted, and unobfuscated HTTP request to a server hosted by Vitalix in Studio City, California, according to Internet Access Records. Clicking on the button after payment only results in the loading of another graphic named nopay.png, which declares the victim's payment has not been verified and one hostage file has been deleted as a result.
Wow.
We're going to start killing hostages.
I like that. We're going to start killing the hostages.
Oh, fuck, the broadcast box is trying to restart for Windows updates. Stop that. It goes on and on like this, but there's really no point to it, as there is no hidden partition to begin with. All the files are deleted by a batch script launched by a Windows.NET executable, signed using a certificate registered to a domain RECA.net, owned by an Italian gas valve company that uses PowerShell to simply delete files from specific directories. If stopped quickly enough, the files would likely be recoverable. Yeah, you just go use, you know, test disk and get your stuff back. There's only been a handful of infections reported thus far. That means the infection hasn't been discovered. Or the means of infection hasn't been discovered. Normally these come through phishing attacks, but this is not as widespread as some others, so it's hard to say. It's confusing because the whole model is a problem. If you don't give people their files back, it's unlikely they'll pay. When researchers reached out to the scammers feigning ignorance, to their email address, which was a Gmail account, cryptovirus32@gmail.com. I love that they published the address.
That's great.
They registered cryptovirus as an email address.
Madman, you and Big had an interesting collection of images a little while back. You should start sending them links. Get RU to help. I know he's got some Harlequin babies around here.
Not me. I don't do that shit.
The ransomers sent back an email trying to explain how to buy and transfer Bitcoin. They were helpful enough to explain, as well as that they were doing cash transfers to buy Bitcoins on a Saturday, so they should do it early before the banks close. Unfortunately, we were unable to elicit further communications from the threat actor. Edmund Burningham and Warren Mercer of Talos wrote in a blog post describing their research. However, this highlights the continued willingness of ransomware operators to provide ongoing technical support to victims to maximize the likelihood they'll receive payouts. Carter said that the malware certificate was issued on July 6, 2016. Check of activity for the Bitcoin wallet shows that there has been no new transactions since June of 2016, so it's apparently not fooled anybody yet. It's amateur hour. One hostage file has been deleted. Oh, fuck. Anthony, you've been quiet. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable enough to even say something stupid, so I didn't jump in.
I just like that. Right. Sorry, we're deleting one file due to lack of payment. And I've got to give him 10 out of, I've got to give him 10 out of 10 for email address. That's brilliant.
You have not yet paid, so we're gonna start killing hostages.
Well, some kind of countdown script, and like, okay, we've just killed one file, and show the name of the file it's supposedly deleted, and then
yeah, but
say,
that
okay,
would require keeping part of the file, at least the directory, wouldn't it?
So yeah, I guess the names. They would have to keep it. Well, then,
although
yeah, skip
if
that
you're
part.
Gonna do it, instead of going for real files, just start using embarrassing file names, like, you know. I don't know, child porn movie 5.
Wow.
Oh no, that's the blackmail ones of,
yeah,
if you don't pay us so much money, we'll report you to the FBI for child porn. Those are my favorite.
Yeah, I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Same.
They were funny though, because they'd clip on the webcam saying, "We're recording you," and just on the screen. Those were fantastic. All right, let me play the Digital Dojo thing.
Mopsar, you have egg roll?
Okay, thanks for that, Madman. Combo number two. Anyways,
Combo number two.
So this is interesting. NASA, or at least somebody who had access to it, maybe they weren't from NASA. It has to be from NASA, but I don't know how this person got it, because it's not from a NASA account, you know what I mean? On GitHub, they posted the entire source code to the Apollo 11 computers. The Apollo 11 guidance computer.
That's cool.
That was used to run the command and lunar modules. The original Apollo 11's guidance computer source code for the command module, Comanche 055, and lunar module, Luminary 99, digitized by the folks at Virtual AGC and MIT Museum. The goal is to be a repo for the original Apollo 11 source code. As such, public Yeah, PRs are welcome for any issues identified between the transcriptions in the repository and the original source scans for Luminary. Oh, they took the scans of the computer printout of the actual typed code. They scanned the books, the physical paper the code was printed on, and typed it up.
Oh, that's cool.
So, I kind of wonder... Yeah, it's all in .agc files. Interpreter.agc. I wonder what that looks like. Copyright, public domain.
Weird. Looking through
block
one,
83. Oh, geez, this is assembler.
Yeah. Make heads or tail of this.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this. This is old school assembler. It would be fun to see if you could come up with a system that would run this code, feed it input, and see what it does.
It can take you to the moon if you kick the right buttons.
But, it's most of these are functions for basically moving crap around in memory.
Yeah, so. I'm looking at it, and it's very hard to make, to see what the hell it's doing. It does look like just a lot of variable movement here.
Yeah, Anthony, you ever worked in assembler before? Because that's mostly what you do is variable movement and addition.
Yeah.
You want
I
multiplication? Write a loop. So. Yeah.
Yeah, because you look at the comments, that's all it's doing.
Yeah. Oh, you want subtraction? Add a negative.
Yeah.
It's pretty much all you do is move shit around in memory. It's actually amazing what modern computers are able to do, considering they're built up of mostly the same assembler commands. So, just a lot more of them. But, anyways, it's actually awesome to look through some of this stuff, and it'd be fun to see if you could pull it down and do something with it. So,
I like this comment. Actually, this is probably an overflow case. That's an interesting comment to put next to a variable. Probably.
So
they were winging it even back then.
Colossus 2. The program is used in the CM as specified in report R5. Blah 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 blah. So the README talks about the folks at Virtual AGC. Project is to provide a computer simulation of the onboard guidance computers used in the Apollo lunar missions. So they've got an emulator. Sweet.
That's cool.
You know, I'm just thinking you could take like a Raspi, like the original one, not like a 2 or 3, if you could get this code to run on it, which would kind of be a feat, but maybe starting with their assembler. I wonder if that's open source or not. Anyways, I was thinking that'd be kind of neat if you could, build out the interface. Oh, 3D print the interface. Stick Raspi or something in it to run the code. Yeah, hell, an Arduino. you'd have about as much computing power in an Arduino as, half the computers NASA used at the time to go to the moon. That'd be neat to build up. Put data into it and watch it run. That might be a fun project to do at some point. Anyways, that's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Visit the site. We just revamped the look of it. Big and I have been discussing articles to put up on the site regarding content creation, actually doing some how-to stuff. Peer decking every Thursday. The subreddit is still a good place to get a hold of me. I have been getting some people are sending me links on the subreddit. So yeah, keep doing that. That's helpful. That's all I got. Anthony, you got anything before we close the show?
Yeah.
Madman?
Nope.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Na 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 Sard.